We'll move to the next case this morning, which is United States v. Drain, case number 12-3684. Ms. Garner.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Sarah Varner on behalf of defendant appellant LaVon Drain. This case is before you following Mr. Drain's plea of guilty and sentence at the district court. This case involves a significantly above-guideline sentence reached in reliance upon an arrest record that contained no facts and did not result in convictions. Because the court enhanced Mr. Drain's sentence without the benefit of accurate and reliable information, this case should be remanded for resentencing. At the time that Mr. Drain came to sentencing, he came with an arrest record that included 20 arrests. Each of those arrests included no facts beyond a mere recitation of the date, the nature of the arrest, and the disposition of the case. This arrest record was the predominant theme at Mr. Drain's sentencing.
Well, I beg to differ. The theme was, I think, a lifestyle of completely outside the law, supporting himself, supporting his children, supporting his drug habits through drug sales, supporting his pit bull through drug sales. There were multiple convictions, serious convictions, with lots of these arrests scattered in between, but there were convictions to base this, to peg the pattern to as well. So
I would agree with you that the district court did address Mr. Drain's drug abuse during the sentencing. However, it's in large part the momentum of this sentencing hearing. We start with the PSR report where the probation officer recommends a departure under 4A1.3. We roll into Mr. Drain's opening statement before the court.
So he had notice going in that the judge might be looking above the guideline range, right?
He did.
Because that PSR will tell you that.
Correct. So, and an objection was made to that by the trial court counsel. Rolling into Mr. Drain's opening statement to the court stopped and said, Mr. Drain's criminal history is a complicating factor, and stated specifically, you've been arrested on 31 separate occasions, picking up arrests at 1 year since his birth or 2 years since he was a teenager. Additionally, during Mr. Drain's statement, she stops him again, the judge stops him again and says, since 2008, you've had 12 different arrests. All of those arrests, excluding the arrests on the current charges that he faced, were referencing that arrest record that had no facts to accompany it. Now, she did address his drug abuse, as you mentioned. However, even the drug abuse was couched in these terms of this lawless lifestyle and kept referring back to his arrest record. In the pronouncement of sentence, when the judge discusses the drugs, she says, the judge stated, the offense level and criminal history category don't take into account your extensive criminal history because they don't take into account your age, which reflects the fact that this has been your life. This has been your lifestyle. And then she makes the comment about this wide open, lawless life.
Yeah, even apart from the rest, though, and there's no visible means of support other than the drug activity. And
That is true. However, the drug activity was in the secondary factor to the arrest record. When she discusses the drugs specifically, she says, this is your lifestyle. It may have been driven by drugs and drug dealing and drug use and whatever, but it was a wide...
This is not an inexperienced judge. I mean, did suddenly, after 30 years or so, this judge forget that she can't consider arrests?
I believe that the district court judge committed error when she stated at the beginning of the hearing, when trial court counsel stated he was getting the impression that she was going to consider this arrest record, and trial court counsel said, hey, wait a minute, without more, these arrests aren't fair game. And at that point, the district court judge, I think, said pretty explicitly, I am entitled to rely on these arrests. These arrests include 5 convictions for felonies now, and he said, okay, those are fair game. Then the district court judge said, also included in these arrests, and she's quoting from the PSR, asking for an enhancement under 4A1.3, she says, 17 of those arrests include drugs and violent behavior. Those arrests are within those 20 arrests without facts. I believe that this court has made clear that while you may be able to consider a bare arrest record without more in sentencing someone within an appropriately calculated guideline range, it is not appropriate to sentence outside on the basis of that arrest record.
Post Booker?
Yes. In the Lopez-Hernandez case.
It's undisputed that he spent his whole adult life supporting his family and everything else exclusively on proceeds from drug sales and participation. That in itself has describes his lifestyle that he was living in. And so it's not a matter of using evidence that isn't proper. If you have 31 arrests and your whole life is based on living on drugs, doesn't that kind of give a capsulize even with the discussion with him in the court? Just pretty much admitting something that you can't overcome.
I believe that she does. You know, there is consideration of appropriate factors. However, it's clear from her comments at sentencing when she couches the drug abuse within this lawless behavior and really emphasizes and hits upon those arrests. Additionally, in the statement of reasons accompanying Mr. Drain's sentence, the district court judge doesn't imply that she's enhancing his sentence for drug abuse or any other 3553 factor. It is specifically stated that his sentence is being enhanced under 4A1.3 for his criminal history. And it's clear from the record that she considers that bare arrest record as a part of that enhanced sentence.
Actually, sentences aren't enhanced under 4A1.3 anymore. We just have either within-guideline sentences or sentences with upward variances or downward variances. Departure analysis is completely optional.
Correct. The judge can apply the departure analysis by analogy following the Booker decision. And I believe that from the record, it's clear that she is applying that departure by analogy. And, in fact, the statement of reasons confirms that when she checks that the reason for departure is 4A1.3.
But a 4A1.3, we don't adjudicate 4A1.3 violations anymore because the guidelines are completely optional. A sentence above the guideline range is sustainable based on the record, independent of what the guidelines say about departures, because departures are obsolete.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, this court has never said, even under a 3553 analysis, that a bare arrest record without more can be used to sentence above an appropriate guideline range. Lopez-Hernandez says that sentencing guidelines do not forbid a judge to consider arrest record in deciding whether to sentence within an applicable guideline range, but this court has never stated that it could be used to sentence with outside of it and above.
But what's wrong with that as a matter of law? I don't think it's forbidden.
I think there are a number of problems with that as a matter of law. I think it's certainly within this court's power to say, from now on, if there's 20 arrests and they have no facts with them, that we will consider that appropriate to consider to sentence above the guideline range.
Isn't there a requirement that the PSR contain all prior arrests?
Correct, Your Honor.
So the data has to be put in the PSR.
Correct.
But the judge can't even turn to that page, is what you're saying?
The case law from this court indicates the judge can consider it if there's accurate and reliable information to show that the conduct occurred. But in this case, we have 20 arrests with no facts whatsoever. There's no detailed police report.
But they had to be included in the PSR.
It did. But it's been said by this court that without that underlying information to show that it's accurate and reliable, the judge is not entitled to rely upon that.
Well, that the arrest record is accurate and reliable? There's no question here that this was an accurate statement of his arrest record.
Correct. To show that the underlying conduct actually occurred. This 20 arrest records.
We're not going to start adjudicating or mandating the adjudication of the facts underlying each individual arrest in order for the district courts to give some weight to an arrest record in evaluating an above-guideline sentence. There's nothing in the law that would require that.
Not to show that Mr. Drain was arrested, but to show that the underlying conduct for which he was arrested occurred.
I'm suggesting that's just an unrealistic request, that we mandate that as a matter of law. I don't see anything in the law of guideline sentencing post-Booker that requires that. The judge can give weight to an arrest record without adjudicating whether the facts support each of the arrests that are listed in the record.
Got
some legal principle to rely on.
I'm relying on the Guajardo-Martinez case, which is a 2011 decision by this court, in which this court said a sentencing court may not rely upon the prior arrest record itself in deciding on sentencing or in imposing an upward departure.
Where does the itself come in?
Itself is that the judge, that there may be indication that there, if there's those facts that give weight to these arrests that help show that the conduct actually occurred, then the judge could consider those. But when
she considered a lot of other things.
But when it's that the arrest record itself was impermissible when it was bare, no facts.
But she had this dialogue, this discussion with the defendant himself, who just conceded that drugs were his life, and that so there's that.
That's correct, Your Honor, but it is still Mr. Drain's position that when she sentenced him based upon the inadequacy of his criminal history and considered that bare arrest record, that that was improper. And if she relied upon that arrest record at all, it requires the case to be remanded for resentencing. And I see my time has expired.
Thank you. Ms. Mindrum.
May it please the Court, Marianne Mindrum, Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana, on behalf of the government. I was not the trial attorney on this matter, but I'll be representing the government on appeal. The district court did not commit error in deciding to upwardly vary from the guidelines. As this court stated, the court's decision to vary was based on a variety of factors, one including the lifetime of criminal history of this defendant, his criminal propensities, and incriminating statements that he admitted to during the sentencing. And those are all factors that the district court relied on in deciding to upwardly vary. The starting point here is 4A1.3 at the United States Sentencing Guidelines.
Why is that the starting point?
Well, because it's not, well...
It's obsolete.
Your Honor, the government agrees with you that it is obsolete, but in terms of responding to defendant's argument,
let's talk first principles here. Should 4A1.3 have any relevance here at all?
I don't believe so under 3553A. I believe the district court accurately mentioned at the very end of sentencing that she is, in deciding to upwardly depart, relying on 3553A and went through five factors in doing so.
And have we ever held, or has any court ever held, that it's a due process violation post-Booker for the district court to give weight to a defendant's arrest record upon an upward variance?
I don't believe there's any court cases where they've found due process violation for that reason alone, and I believe that many of the cases actually even reference the fact that the guidelines are advisory. They mentioned it, 4A1.3, more as a policy statement in the sense that you can't rely on the arrest record alone, which is not the case here. The judge took into account a variety of factors, and in a sense that she used the arrest record, she used it only to engage in a colloquy with the defendant to elicit facts that she then relied on in making her decision. Those five factors were the extensive use of drug use and dealing, his propensity toward violence, the defendant's age, his inconsistent statements made to the police officers at the trial, the police officers, and then his inconsistencies stated at trial, and the defendant's second stolen firearm. The district court made it very clear that those were the five factors she was looking at in deciding to depart and ended up going up from the guidelines because of that.
It would, in fact, be extraordinary to hold that considering an arrest record at the time of sentencing violates due process. That would implicate the sentencing practices of all 50 states,
Your Honor,
as well as federal sentencing practices.
The government agrees, and I think it would be impractical to hold judges where they're entitled, now that the guidelines are advisory, to take into account a variety of factors, including the defendant's history and characteristics, which is what the government believes happened here at the trial level.
Do we have cases that suggest that it's a due process problem if judges do that?
There are some cases that suggest that in and of itself, if that was the only factor that the district court relied on in deciding to depart, that may be an issue to take into account.
Well, I don't know what that means as a legal matter, to say that it may be an issue on what legal basis.
I don't believe there's any court that's held that it is as a matter of due process a violation. But I do believe that the court case that Ms. Varner mentioned, the Martinez matter, they discussed in a sense that the as a policy matter, you shouldn't take into account an arrest record.
As a matter of the common law of sentencing or what?
I believe probably as a matter of reasonableness of the sentence, whether it's reasonable to rely specifically on only on an arrest record in and of itself.
So a sentence is per se unreasonable if a judge does that? Is that what you read the cases to hold?
I don't know if it would be I don't think any court has held that it's per se unreasonable just to rely on the arrest record alone.
Well, is there any case where, because we use the word itself and exclusively and all that, is there any case that you know of where a court didn't consider anything else other than an arrest record?
Post-Booker, I have not found any cases.
I mean, where that's not what we have here, obviously. At least that's my look at it. When we talk about just an arrest record and don't consider anything else, then maybe there's an argument. Or maybe there's something that we need to look at, but we don't have that here, at least the way I see it.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. And I don't believe post-Booker there has been any cases that have indicated that. So, Your Honor, if the court does not have any further questions, the government would like to rely on its brief and find that the judgment of the district court should be affirmed in this case.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Varner, your time has expired, but I'll give you another minute if you have anything further you'd like to say in rebuttal. We kept you at the podium a long time.
Thank you. One quick point on rebuttal. I understand that the court is saying that the concept of departures is post-Booker, no longer applies. However, there is case law from our circuit post-Booker that still discusses the arrest record and actually still discusses 4A1.3. There is no case that says it's proper to sentence above guidelines based on arrest record. And I just want to point out briefly that in Lopez-Hernandez, this court cited with approval a Third Circuit case that discussed the same issue. And the court in Berry stated, there may be situations where the number of prior arrests or similarity of prior charges to the offense of conviction are so overwhelming or so suggestive of actual guilt that they become difficult to ignore. However, that court also cautioned that the problems with that approach, an ad hoc approach, letting each judge decide when that momentum has built enough to consider, is that you then have an ad hoc position, judge to judge. One might think 5 is enough, one might think 20. And perhaps most importantly, that this could really exacerbate sentencing disparities. If you grew up in a high crime minority neighborhood versus an affluent suburb, the likelihood that your arrest record will differ from one another is high, and we may end up with sentencing disparities arising from economic, social, and racial factors. If there's no further questions, we ask that the sentence be reversed and remanded.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.